power on.
The following is a presentation of the Sovereign Technica podcast feed.
Ooh, the man of tomorrow is here. Putting this one under the Sovereign Tech X label. Because, well, for a couple reasons. One is this comes as a request from a wonderful listener. And, I mean, just one of my longtime faves. just a beautiful human being out there. And also because it's a subject that, honestly, I haven't, you know, even on a proper Sovereign Tech, I haven't really talked about in a very long time. I've talked about NFTs, sure, but haven't really given an overview, around the crypto space in a good while. I've talked about it some on other shows that I've been on, like Into the Void, you know, and some others, where I've gotten into it. But, in general, you know, in my feed, I haven't given, you know, a kind of an update of, I mean, cause we're, you know, we're in this game for over a decade now. I mean, Sovereign Tech has been going for over a decade, but I mean cryptocurrency, you know, blockchain, Bitcoin. And I think it's very, when the listener asked, I was like, oh yeah. Or yeah, no, I should totally do that. It's a great idea. And so I want to get that in now. I guess just to give some background, because it's been a little while since I've talked about this stuff, you know, directly in my feed, I want to give a little background for new listeners who maybe, you know, don't go that far back, as to, you know, what is my quick history with the crypto space? And then, you know, what is my present with the crypto space, which I think is also, valid, actually, maybe even more so. Okay. So I have been into Bitcoin, pretty much since 2010, and certainly ramped up hard in 2011 when I had initially moved to New Hampshire. It was just one of the hot things going on. I mean, you basically, you know, New Hampshire, the New Hampshire crowd. I mean, I'm not saying this is true of everybody in New Hampshire. I'm just saying with, you know, the cool kids around, everything was libertarianism, paleo, and, you know, as in the paleo diet and lifestyle. There's another P that could come up too, that being polyamory, you know, but, and Bitcoin, you know, and blockchain, like those were the hot topics. Okay. And so, you know, certainly I fell into that. But I was into it before, you know, I had even moved to New Hampshire, honestly, even before I'd really heard about the Free State Project. I've told a story that at a previous workplace, we used to have to burn in, computers and, you know, burn in the RAM and everything. And my burn in process was running Bitcoin miners at the time, you know, off of USB drives. So anyway, I don't have any of that anymore whatsoever. But we'll talk about this. But that's my point, is that, you know, like this is something that I have been interested in and engaged in for an incredibly long time. Now, when I moved to New Hampshire, of course, I end up being on Free Talk Live, which was for a while, I think people forget this. You know, this is a nationally syndicated radio show, probably, certainly in 2011 and 2012, you know, in 2013, the only radio show, and maybe even the only major, you know, kind of outside of, you know, online news sites and blogs and whatever, probably the only, you know, nationally syndicated or, you know, nationally transmitted media outlet, you know, like that would be TV or radio, say, that was even mentioning Bitcoin. So it was a voice, and it inspired a lot of people who would go on to become, you know, even bigger deals in the blockchain space, in the crypto space. I don't need to name names, but I'm sure you know them, you know, just some of the most recognized people, you know, in the crypto space, some of the biggest names, they learned about it from Free Talk Live. So, and they'll tell you as much. It's not really a secret. Anyway, so, you know, being on that show as I was for years, that, you know, certainly got me into the space even more. And at one point, you know, combined with the launch of my own show in 2012, that being Sovereign Tech, which covered the blockchain, you know, the crypto space for a long time, you know, I would get invited to speak at various events. I've spoken at many, you know, blockchain events. And I was always honored to do that, even if, and to the credit of the people that ran these shows or, you know, ran these events, even if at times I was very critical of things that were happening in the blockchain space. And I don't just mean like critical, say, of Ethereum, but also perhaps at times of Bitcoin and, you know, and some others. And maybe of the community in general. They always let me say what I wanted to say. And I was really, you know, I was always so honored by that. They always knew, like, no, you can't chain Brian up. You just got to let him go and let him do his thing and people will be there. And they were. They were packed houses. I was really, really honored by that. So anyway, you know, that's kind of my history. And again, you know, Sovereign Tech, like the blockchain space would be a major focus for quite some time. And as things would go along, and part of the reason I stopped talking about it at the time, you know, we're talking in the 2015, 2016 era, or, you know, around that time, I would stop talking about it, not because I thought it wasn't valuable, but mainly because I saw blockchain going in a direction that, that wasn't exciting, and that I would basically just be every week, I would just be railing about, oh, what the fuck, you know, why is this major fund manager, you know, getting into Bitcoin? This isn't about that. This is about putting an end to the legacy system, not about propping it up, not about supporting it. Famously, I was very critical of the creation of ICOs, right? Initial coin offerings, which was a way for essentially for companies, not even just new ones, sometimes old ones, for them to print their own money, print their own funding. And, you know, that fell apart eventually. But my problem with that was it artificially held up Silicon Valley, as in it artificially propped up Silicon Valley and kept its bubble from popping, which is something that is coming to head regardless of how much they do. I mean, and if you need more evidence of that, look, one of the first signs that a bubble's coming is massive layoffs. And in the crypto space, we, regardless of the fact that these companies are making hand over fist on their quarterly reports, they're still doing the largest, pretty much the largest layoffs, I think, in all these companies' histories, whether it's Microsoft, Meta, go down the list. That's a sign of bad things to come. And you say, oh, but they're still profitable. Ah, but profits often come from well-laid plans. Sometimes, you know, either quarters or even years previous, and then they, you know, those well-laid plans, the profits will come in from it. But if the market's not there after the fact, it doesn't matter your well-laid plans, you know, eventually the rice spoils. So I think that's a big part of what's going on. And really this is true, not just for Silicon Valley, you know, not just for the tech sector, but for many sectors, you know, basically, unless you're in like the medical industry, you know, I think you're kind of screwed. I mean, and, you know, if you're into to varying whatever metals and all this other stuff, I mean, that's a different story too. But a lot of the new hotness, I think, is really, you know, it's coming to an end. So I bring that up to say, well, then is it a good idea to get your money out of the legacy system? Well, we'll talk about that. I'll answer that question, but that is an important question that all of this is leading to. Now, as far as my present goes within blockchain, I do work with a blockchain, one company in particular, but also I was working with another company this year on AI and blockchain. So I'm still knee deep in the space. In fact, in many ways, I'm deeper than I've ever been, meaning I'm not just in the community, I'm actually in the building phase of things, or in the building sector, shall we say, of things, the BIDL sector, as we call it. but that's where I'm at. Okay. So, you know, I won't go into heavy detail on, you know, as far as these companies go, but I am knee deep with them. And so, you know, I get it. I have to, particularly one of the companies I work with, I, by design, I have to keep up on as much as one can on the news, not just on Bitcoin, not just on Ethereum, but on as many, you know, all the up and comers, as many blockchains as I can keep my eye on, I have to keep my eye on. Keep an eye on the meme coin space, on the NFT space, unfortunately, on the on the metaverse space, on all things Web3, and all, like, I have to be up on all of that, or I am not doing my job and I don't get paid. And guess what, Daddy? I gotta get paid. Okay? So, because as long as I've been in the crypto space, that doesn't mean I'm hoarding an ass ton of crypto. I am not. Wish I was, but I'm not. And, well, anyway, we'll leave it at that. Okay? So there's all my preamble. This is, you know, this is my standing. Okay? I am in as much in this space as just about, honestly, any of the big names that you can imagine that are in blockchain. As in, I've been around most of the time. I've been around longer than they have. In fact, that's part of the reason I get some of the jobs that I get, because people know, holy shit, that's Brian Sovereign. I'm not saying I'm a big deal. I'm just saying they know it's Brian Sovereign. He's been in this for, you know, since the beginning almost. And so, you know, but that reputation precedes me, thankfully. Okay. But that's my standing. And am I still in it? Yeah. Again, like I said, I'm in it bigger than honestly I've ever been. And you know, cause I, over the years, I've gotten multiple offers to work with, varying blockchain companies, some of which I've mentioned over the years, others, you know, varying blockchain companies and blockchains, and, you know, some of them I haven't. But you know, I do feel I'm working with people who actually give a shit about the space. And that's the main thing. It's like, oh, is this just a money grab? Or do you really, you know, what's your end game? What's your, I hate to use this word, but I'll use it. What's your vision? What do you, you know, what's this all supposed to take shape as? And so, you know, I won't do business with a company that I don't think, you know, wants this dramatic evolution away from the legacy system. Okay. And that's one of the great values, you know, of blockchain, is that it ultimately can defund the system. And honestly, I think the legacy system, you know, whether we're talking about BlackRock, Grayscale, whatever, all these guys trying to go for Bitcoin ETFs right now, spot Bitcoin ETFs, they're buying in because they're scared to death that their system is falling, and they're going to the only thing that they can think of that has, you know, any kind of real traction. And, you know, to Bitcoin's defense, speaking of defense, it's the most secure computer network on the planet, in the solar system. Well, that's unless there's like life on Europa or Enceladus or something like that. But anyway, okay, so you get my point. It's a good place to hold things. If for anything, because I've always said this, but wait a minute, because you're saying, wait a minute, Bitcoin is bullshit. It's magic internet money. You know, it's on this elevator ride all the time, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't really hold value. It doesn't have any intrinsic value. Again, that is where you're wrong. The intrinsic value is the network itself. Okay. So as long as that network is out there, which it is, and I don't see it going anywhere. And quantum computers are on the way. We just had a major breakthrough, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's happening, and it's going to break all asymmetric encryption. Okay. All of this stuff is already planned. You know, it's in the works. Like, they're figuring this stuff out. And you better believe that all these people who want to, you know, all these companies and fund managers, hedge funds, you know, and all that want to get involved in blockchain in general and in Bitcoin, you better believe they are funding the fuck, and I know they are, funding the fuck out of development to make sure that quantum encryption schemes are getting implemented or getting worked on right away before that could even be a thing. And even then, I still, you know, yeah, we had a breakthrough in quantum computing, but it's still kind of theoretical. It's not really implemented yet. Yeah, the math is sound, but the math can sometimes be sound, and then the implementation, for whatever reason, cosmic forces, and oh yes, cosmic forces can affect computers, folks, in case you don't know. Just look it up. It's real. And in fact, those cosmic forces could break encryption on their own. No quantum computer required. But regardless, okay, and we're talking about cosmic rays, right? Bit flipping. Regardless, okay, this stuff, this is, you know, quantum computing, once it gets put into implementation, may not actually work. You know, it still might not actually work, even if theoretically it should. That doesn't necessarily matter at this juncture. Like I said, lots of projects, blockchains, and, you know, dev teams are working on that. I mean, you think of even something like a messaging app like Signal. Signal has already implemented, quantum resistant encryption. So great. You know, you can do that now. I mean, we talked about this years ago. Remember, BlackBerry was already studying, of all things, fucking BlackBerry, what was it? QMX, right? They were already studying and made a big announcement about it of, you know, quantum computer resistant encryption. So it's not like this is anything new. It's like, oh shit, now the quantum computers are real. We're all fucked. No. And it doesn't even need a quantum computer for you to be fucked. Ugh, give me a break. Anyway, that doesn't mean that just to give a quick update, of course, one of the other places where a lot of money is getting put in, usually this is by governments and, you know, alphabet soup organizations, is in, would be blockchain analysis, right? And trying to analyze and discover what, you know, pinpoint the points of origin of varying activity on varying blockchains, as in discover who sent what to who. Okay. So yes, there's plenty of money getting put into that as well. There is an arms race that is going on. Okay. This type of arms race happens with every new technology, and particularly with technologies that can be either very liberating or very oppressive. Does that mean that blockchain is oppressive? Certainly it can be, right? CBDCs are a thing. As in, you know, central bank digital currencies, right? Or stable coins are becoming a thing. I do not think that these things are good ideas. I'm not a fan of these. I would not tell you to invest in any of these. Stable coins, you know, an argument could be made that stable coins are basically, they are cryptocurrencies pegged to some kind of, fiat currency or legacy currency, we'll say. And so they're not speculative and can hold a value, or that's sort of the concept. These could be useful for transmitting money at varying points, but then it's just really a transmission layer, and they're not like it's not an alternative blockchain. That's not what stable coins, I don't think, are really meant to be. Again, they're more, I feel like they're more of a pilot for, you know, CBDCs, but anyway, there's no interest to be had in those. I want to make sure I get to the questions that this listener brought in. And just kind of talking about I think what he was looking for is, you know, okay, where is all of this going? Where is blockchain? Where's Bitcoin going? Where's blockchain going? You know, what are some things worthwhile looking at? What's the latest on how to do Bitcoin right, perhaps, things like this. And, you know, I'm happy to talk about all of that. But let me be clear here. So, you know, stablecoins, CBDCs, obviously these are bastard stepchildren of blockchain. Of Bitcoin in general, but they're just that, you know, and there's no, you know, while I don't agree with being mean to children, there is no reason to invest in these kids. They're worthless. They're worthless on the long term. And that's really any time, you know, we're talking about blockchain in general. If you're not talking long term, you're talking short term. And if you're talking short term, then you are going to just consistently and as quickly as possible invest in the ultimately worthless, right? You're going to do the pump and dumps. There's a lot of these, and there's new ones all the time, believe me, especially like layer two, right? Which layer two are like coins built on top of a primary coin, say, you know, things built on top of, like Polkadot, right? Polkadot is built on top of Ethereum and so on. That would be a layer two. And they can hold their own value. There is money to be made, I think, in the layer twos, but ultimately you want to hold, you know, if you're, you want to HODL, right? You want to hold, I would say, in the layer ones. Because one of the issues that I brought up years before these things were being implemented, but they were being talked about, say side chains, cross-chain compatibility, you know, all of this stuff. I had said years ago, don't do it. How are you going to secure this? You don't have that answer, so don't fucking develop. Like, don't bother. Like, we don't need it. Famously, you know, I was a big proponent of not you know, side chains on Bitcoin, which some Bitcoin maximalists are even really hot about. Okay. As in Bitcoin maximalist people that are, you know, only into Bitcoin. And they think the rest of the currencies are crap. We'll talk about that. But, you know, I had said, well, don't do side chains. Don't do any of that stuff. Just do colored coins with Bitcoin. And that idea seems to have effectively died. I mean, it died years ago, but it's a pity because I think it's a very simple and very slick implementation, and a secure one at that, within Bitcoin. But it didn't happen because that would allow things to be done more at the core and wallet level. Where I think you can make a lot of the real changes is more at the wallet, like leave the pipe dumb, right? Leave the blockchain dumb, have the wallets do all the fancy shit, but whatever. Okay. So, yeah, I think we got a lot of that out of the way. NFTs still worthless. Bringing in the Bitcoin conversation, of course, one of the success stories of 2023, I'm not saying it's a good thing, but it's a success, is what's called Bitcoin ordinals. And ordinals is this idea where you can put like a bunch more data into a blockchain transmission than maybe the blockchain itself was really designed for. This has allowed for NFTs, among other things, but primarily what people know it for are NFTs on the Bitcoin blockchain. Okay. Again, this is called Bitcoin ordinals. Again, it launched in January of this year of 2023. It kind of came out of nowhere and it got to the point where, you know, one of the criticisms that people make against, say, Ethereum and some of these more, shall we say, Turing complete blockchains, you know, one of the arguments made against these is the transaction fees are fucking insane. And we certainly saw that as well. I mean, more so in the past couple of years, but 2023 wasn't a shining example either. You know, I mean, I remember there was points where the gas fees on Ethereum, you know, you were looking, I mean, even just to send $100, the gas fees would be almost as much as $100, or it would be $100. It'd be even worse than that. Like far worse, crazy. Like it would cost millions to send millions. That doesn't even make sense. Right. But that's literal. That's it happened. Anyway, it got to the point with ordinals. Now, granted, you know, maybe this doesn't seem so bad to you, but one of the, you know, arguments for proof of work and for lots of different things for why Bitcoin is set up the way it is that it is the best way to keep transaction fees, mining fees, you know, as low as possible. But we got to the point where it peaked up to almost $40 for transaction fees. And that would be to send just about anything. You know, you could send a buck and it could cost you $40. So, ordinals have been problematic. And there are a lot of Bitcoin maxis, a lot of Bitcoin maximalists who do not like ordinals. Oh yeah, well, but it's made on Bitcoin. No. This is not how Bitcoin is meant to be. And I agree with those guys, gals, and Zs. I agree with them. I think ordinals is a horrible idea. I think NFTs are just a flat out horrible idea. And it hasn't gotten better. You know, an argument could be, I mean, ironically, Bitcoin, it's so funny because the Bitcoin maxis were the ones really attacking or were part of the groups really attacking NFTs and rightfully so. But then and NFTs in a way did really die. You know, I mean, their value tanked. But the funny thing is Bitcoin ordinals have effectively saved the NFT community. And even the concept of NFTs, which I just find to be an incredible irony, whether or not in the future, somehow, you know, like the Bitcoin Core client is going to block, the ability to, or limit the ability of ordinals. I mean, I kind of feel like that's going to end up happening, but I can't say for certain. To be fair, you know, you could have used, Counterparty, right? You could have used Counterparty to do, and people did use Counterparty to actually attach, because Counterparty is kind of a layer two for Bitcoin to actually attach NFTs to the Bitcoin network. So it's not like ordinals needed to be done in the first place. Counterparty could have just been used. And even that I think was a better idea, overall. Anyway, So we're getting in a lot, but I want to get out there to you all the things that are shit. Okay. You know, again, CBDCs, stable coins, NFTs, all crap. The concept of like, I mean, there have been, what do they call them? AI coins for a little while this year. Metaverse coins is another one that was out there where it's these coins that are like supposedly purpose built to somehow help AI, which, okay. Like, I don't even know what the fuck that means. I mean, it's just pure marketing speak and just plug in the latest hot term and that's all that crap is. So I wouldn't pay any attention to that. However, you know, if you wanted to just make a few bucks quickly, or maybe more than a few bucks really quick, then yeah, look out for, pay attention to, you know, whatever the latest buzzword coin is, whether it's AI coin, metaverse coin, whatever, and, you know, buy a bunch of it and then like sell inside of a week or something, you know, and I bet you could make a ton. But you got to have, you know, a decent amount of money in the first place to be able to do that. That's the reason. It's like, oh, well, if everybody knows how to do this and if there's such a simple formula, why doesn't everybody do it? It's because most people don't have the starting capital, you know, to even try. And then at the same time, it is still a risk. It might not pick up. Who knows? You know, not everything's going to be a Pepe coin or whatever, even though, I mean, that died too. So, So a lot of these things that like, we'll just call them buzzword coins. They really have no lasting value. I mean, they just don't. So, you know, keep that in mind. As far as let's just get into, because this doesn't have to necessarily be like a super long show. I'll certainly get in my predictions going forward, not price predictions. They specifically said that, and I wouldn't do that anyway. But to get, I mean, maybe I'll bring up a little bit, but you know, it's not. It does, that part doesn't matter to me. Okay. So what ones are worthwhile that are out there right now? Let's do this. So as far as what's worthwhile, obviously Bitcoin is king. Honestly, I'll always see Bitcoin as king. I know JP Morgan and others have come out with an analysis that basically says, oh no, Ethereum in 2024 can overtake Bitcoin. No, it's not. it's just not. Okay. Am I impressed that Ethereum actually survived, you know, its major like upgrade, you know, and into the Shanghai upgrade? Where they completely went proof of stake. I'm amazed it's still here. Sure. You know, and I'm amazed that like Ethereum Classic and others haven't done, which stayed with proof of work, you know, haven't done better for themselves. But regardless, okay. That doesn't mean that I think Ethereum is really going to go anywhere. You know, now that it kind of, it sort of wins an environmental or a sustainability argument with proof of stake, which is probably why it did survive. I think it's going to be here for a good long while. It really is considered, you know, the gold standard within not so much speculative and monetary value of, you know, of a cryptocurrency, but more. Okay, this is what, say, the metaverse and Web3 is going to get built on. And so thus it has value. We'll get into predictions of whether or not, you know, any of those things are going to be a part of the future. Okay. But regardless, Ethereum doesn't look like it's going to go anywhere anytime soon. Could it see, you know, again, you're not asking price, so I don't want to get into that. I really will steer clear of that. But Ethereum in itself, I mean, this gets into a bit of the prediction game or my predictions for the future. Ethereum itself is still like a slow and bad idea. It's still not cost effective. It still does not hold any appreciable advantage over the legacy, you know, computer servers everywhere system. Okay. Centralized servers everywhere. Like there's no clear advantage to that. So Ethereum, you know, yes, it has a future, but it's not really the future I'm looking for. And also, really, in the end, well, I'll tell you later about what I think it's going to end up being. Anyway, so Bitcoin, you know, I think is always going to be Bitcoin. And I think that even the largest players in the legacy finance game recognize the value of having an independent currency. Like, they have just come to that reality. Partly because the United States government is trillions of dollars in debt. Okay? Like, it literally can't afford to fucking go to war. Otherwise, don't you think they'd already be jumping on Iran? Jumping on, you know, a lot of, I mean, yes, they're sending some money, but they're not, you know, it's it's pennies to the dollar or whatever, you know, for compared to sending actual troops. Like, it's an amazing time to consider, and I don't say amazing necessarily in the positive, but it's an amazing time to consider that we live in a time where the U.S. literally can't afford to go to war. I mean, I'm glad, but wow, you know, like, that's how bad it is that even the war machine can't be funded. So, you know, that's why I say that a lot of, you know, even the biggest players in legacy finance recognize there is value in having a completely geographically independent currency. And, you know, this is part of what's going on, you know, with, you know, I think, like, right now, in one of the hottest topics in crypto throughout 2023 has been the SEC versus BlackRock and Grayscale and them wanting to do a spot Bitcoin ETF, okay, and offer that to their customers. Now, let's be clear here. Per usual, the United States is wildly behind the rest of the world, right? Insultingly behind the rest of the world in almost every way, okay? And even in innovation, wildly behind China, not even close. Like, there's no argument. Whoa, why does Apple develop shit in China? Why don't they do it here? We got the best and the brightest here. No, we don't. Sorry, jackass. Like, we just don't. The best engineers in the world are in China. You have to deal with China. It is a fact of life. If you want innovative fucking shit, if you want stuff that doesn't, you know, melt in people's hands as far as tech goes, you don't want your iPhone melting in your hand, you are going to work in China. That is how it goes. Okay. Don't believe me? Go ask people who you think are smarter than me, and I'm sure they're going to tell you the same goddamn thing. It's just not true anymore. No, you cannot just make shit in the U.S. because you are dealing with a bag of dum-dums. Oh, we got great software people? Okay. It's good. But the software has to get put on something. It has to be put on hardware to do anything. Anyway, so to be clear, my point was that in other parts of the world, including Europe and, you know, other areas, spot ETFs, not just for Bitcoin, but also for Ethereum and whatever. I mean, they're everywhere. It's nothing new. It's only an argument in the United States. And why is that? And in my opinion, that is because the SEC, or the US government particularly, is fucking terrified that if you give people, if you give institutional investors, right, which is what, you know, Grayscale, part of what they'd be going after and BlackRock would be going after, if you give institutional clients the option, you know, to put such and so much into an alternative currency than the greenback, you know, or then something that is, that really isn't, I mean, because remember, the SEC really doesn't control Bitcoin. I mean, you can try to legislate whatever it wants, but it doesn't fucking control it. Can't. Or at least under most scenarios, it can't. Then, yeah, like, they're fucking terrified because all of this value suddenly falls out from underneath their purview. And ultimately, that's money that cannot be taxed and called upon, or cannot be, you know, like, directly taxed and called upon by the U.S. government, who needs it right now. Because, again, it's trillions of dollars in debt. It's insane. So you want to keep that in mind. And that speaks to, the, you know, ultimately the power of Bitcoin. Okay. It's not, I mean, not everything is sunshine and rainbows with Bitcoin, but there's a reason it's still king and it's not going anywhere. And is it, you know, in my opinion, is it the safest thing to be hodling? Totally. Yes. The other part though, you know, and again, I mean, that's even without, or let me speak to this. That's even without speculation. The price doesn't fucking matter. The fact is, it's always going to hold value. As long as computers exist, Bitcoin is going to hold value. That's it. Forget about the fucking price. The fact is that no matter what's happening around the world, no matter what's going on, as long as there are computer networks or as long as there's a computer connecting to another computer, Okay, and that's possible, whether it's by fucking pictures being taken between the cameras, I don't know. As long as that's possible, Bitcoin is going to fucking hold value, and thus you are going to be able to have something in your hand by using that money. I can't even say that about the US dollar. I can't even say that about gold. You understand? That's how powerful Bitcoin is. So it's key. It's a key part of any like crypto strategy or knowledge, you know, is to be as up on Bitcoin as you can possibly be. Now, does that mean that it's the only thing worth holding? No. And am I going to get into crypto wallets? Yes. That was asked about. So in my opinion, Litecoin is, while Bitcoin is the thing that's always just going to be, I can almost say the same thing 99% of the way for Litecoin. And Litecoin actually also has the advantage of MWeb, right? So with MWeb, that allows for, encrypted private transactions. I mean, all transactions are encrypted on blockchain, more or less. I mean, there's an open ledger, but like it's secured by encryption, right? By asymmetric, cryptography is what I mean. But with Litecoin, you get private, you know, kind of like Zcash, you get private transactions with MWeb. And that's baked right in. I'm kind of surprised that MWeb hasn't been implemented in Bitcoin yet, unless I missed something in the past 24 hours. I mean, it's always possible. Again, there's so many coins, there's so much shit going on. Even for somebody who is required to keep an eye on it and even gets paid to keep an eye on a lot of this stuff, you can't. You know, I mean, it's just not possible to keep an eye on everything. And with X, you know, slash shitter or Twitter, sorry, falling apart, it's just as bad. It's just really bad. It doesn't help, because they used to be a way to keep an eye on trends, but not really anymore. It's all, as much as Elon tried to kill off the bots, they're still there in droves. Okay. So Litecoin is where things I always feel get very interesting, because Litecoin, in my opinion, is the experimental layer. It's like a live test net. I know that sounds paradoxical, but it's a live test net for Bitcoin. I've always said this. It's still true today. Litecoin is absolutely number two on the list. That doesn't mean it's shit. Quite the opposite. In many ways, I think it's better than Bitcoin. One of the other great things about Litecoin, and that I think will be true going into the future, here's something to grok, and I do think that this is going to continue to grow, even with the halving, as in, the halvening or whatever they want to call it for Bitcoin, that's coming up in 2024. Even with that coming up, and it being that much, requiring that much more computational power to be able to resolve blocks, you know, in Bitcoin. Even with that coming up, I think that the rise of the home nodes, which used to be what cryptos could only run on anyway, you know, there weren't like a lot of these, warehouses or, you know, kind of more institutional mining operations that existed. But, you know, that became a thing for a while now. But then I think we are kind of going back to where there are a lot of people who basically what they want is, because the regulatory environment going on around the world, you know, whether it's MiCA in Europe or whatever the SEC bullshit is saying, you know, even though they lost to Ripple, which, you know, kudos, even though Ripple still sucks. there's so much regulation. A lot of people really want, what do you call that? Like KYC, right? You know, they want that Bitcoin that, or that crypto that is not traceable, that just, you know, came from mining the blockchain and resolving blocks. And, you know, you don't know its point of, you know, it's something that avoided the regulation basically. Okay. So this is a thing that is still popular in Bitcoin today. And I think it will continue to be popular even if mathematically it seems almost impossible that a home Bitcoin node miner could resolve a block. The chance that you could, and even the value at what it is right now, and I know your electric bill goes up, okay? I know. It's just so worth it. Like, it's worth the risk, you know, to just try. Now, The thing is, with Bitcoin, I think that's true. With Litecoin, it's 10 times more true. Meaning that Litecoin is fairly less intensive than Bitcoin, holds great value, and will continue to go up in value, you know, because there's going to be that point where, okay, yeah, Bitcoin's done so well for us that, you know, in another 10 years, where I think people will look at Litecoin and go, well, this is another Bitcoin. Like, let's be redundant. Let's have redundancy, not be redundant, but have redundancy. Let's rock that. And I think that would be a smart move. And I could really see that happening. I don't see Litecoin going anywhere. And if anything, I feel like Litecoin is the more interesting because it doesn't have a lot. I mean, it has institutional interest, but it's not so much in the purview, particularly of the legacy media, you know, and whatever, that it's a good thing. You know, it's almost like value by obscurity. And I mean, it's everybody, I think most people, I mean, if you know Bitcoin, a lot of people really will know about Litecoin, but it's Litecoin news isn't the barrage, right? As to where Bitcoin is or whatever bullshit's going on with FTX or whatever, you know? But Litecoin kind of plays under the radar, even though it's so feature rich, has things in some ways is even better than Bitcoin. And so I think there's real opportunity there. And, you know, if I were feeling like cryptocurrency was my activism or isn't activism, Litecoin is where I would be looking. In fact, with the implementation of MWeb, I still dig Zcash overall because, you know, it has a bunch of other features, but really Litecoin has, in my opinion, ultimately made Zcash redundant and not in the good way. I mean, as in like, really? You know, I mean, ZK Snarks is still brilliant. Like, I'm not saying anything against that, blah, blah, blah. But just, you know, once Litecoin implemented privacy features like that, it just, for me, it became the most interesting. You know, and for me personally, even more so than Bitcoin. Like I said, Bitcoin's king. I'm not arguing against that. And, you know, I get called a Bitcoin maximalist a lot of times. And, you know, that's fine. Again, I don't mind it. But in some ways, like there are still other chains that I do think are kind of interesting. And really, Litecoin is at the top of that list. And I can't picture it ever falling it off. So, yeah, Bitcoin, Litecoin, I think those are two that if you're looking at a really long game and of trying to have like, you know, regulatory and geographically independent currency available to you or value available to you. Those are the main ones that I would be looking at. Yes. You know, still a fan of Zcash, still a fan of Monero. Like I like what some of these, you know, differing communities are doing out there. Dash is still doing great things. You know, Dash maybe would be my number three. And part of the reason is that people actually use Dash. I mean, seriously, people actually use Dash. Like they will buy shit with Dash. Same is true for Bitcoin Cash, honestly. But you know, as far as the question of, okay, what would I be holding, either for, again, for some degree of activism or for protection or for some activism already? And maybe even for some speculation if you wanted. Yeah, Bitcoin and Litecoin's really where it's at. I mean, you have some legacy finance players who are wanting, you know, say these Bitcoin ETFs to come. Now, a lot of people are expecting, first off, they're expecting the Bitcoin ETFs to be approved, not just one at a time. Like they're not expecting, oh, okay, yeah, we'll do BlackRock and see how that goes, right? And then we'll do, you know, Grayscale and see how that goes, blah, blah, blah. The expectation is that they'll all be approved at the same time. And that with this, there will be this massive influx of interest and thus speculation in Bitcoin. And that the price is going to go through the roof. Some people are expecting 100K, right, per Bitcoin, whatever. There, some of these same companies that are, you know, either developing or working with, say, these spot Bitcoin ETFs, you know, their prediction right now is that with Bitcoin, as of this recording, above 40K, above 40,000 per Bitcoin, they think that the price, the speculative price from the launch of the spot Bitcoin ETFs is actually already in the price right now. Meaning it's, and that even the halving, whatever you want to call it, that even that is presently priced into Bitcoin at really above 30K. So, you know, you have a lot of people that even though they are very interested in Bitcoin, they don't expect Bitcoin to go much higher. They anticipate that none of the upcoming events in Bitcoin, you know, launch of ETFs, halving, whatever, they don't expect that to, you know, there might be like a quick initial shock for a day or maybe even a week, but that really right now at, you know, 30K plus, 40K plus, that all those price factors are already priced in. So keep that in mind. I don't even know if I want to begin to speculate on that. But for me, again, it doesn't matter. It's always the utility. Okay. It's always the utility. And again, the independence away from regulatory and geographic control. That's the value. Okay. As far as how much each one is worth, whatever, that ultimately doesn't matter, because what matters is at the time that you need it, can you use it? The answer is probably yes. Can't say anything with certainty when it comes to economics, but probably yes. And again, that probably is a stronger word than I'd put in front of the US dollar or much else. You know, I've talked about for a long time on Sovereign Tech that, you know, in the future, like I didn't really anticipate that the US would ever go into like a massive economic downturn, not like a massive one. That is no longer true. That has been true for a few years now, because I think the US absolutely can go into that. You know, I'm not going to get into the issue of people not having children. I mean, you can hear all the rich people out there, Elon and everybody else, saying like, oh, you got to start having kids. You got to have kids. Now, why are they telling you to have kids? Is it because they're Catholic or something like that? No, they're telling you to have kids because they're terrified that their businesses won't actually have workers or, more importantly, customers in the future at the present birth rates. You know, this is something that China is dealing with. This is something that Japan is dealing with. I mean, this is something that actually a lot of Southeast Asian countries, you know, like Singapore, didn't they do that national night where the government was literally funding, and this is happening in other places too, the government is literally funding advertising and marketing to the point of cheesy NSYNC style songs to tell people to get fucking and have kids. Don't wear protection. Like, it's amazing, the complete antithesis to the AIDS scare of the 80s that is happening. You know, and there's, look, I'm not knocking having kids. I will say, you know, if you want to engage some activism, you know, like maybe not add to the workforce and the customer base. Okay. But no, again, it's just one form of activism, you know, and you don't want to have kids as activism either, of course, because, you know, that was the whole concept of Liberty Babies, which I've debunked that shit a million times over. But it's a beautiful and wonderful thing to have children. It really is. So, you know, I'm not knocking that. I'm just saying don't do it because the billionaire trust fund asshats told you to. Okay. All right. So, you know, there are massive, I think, you know, economic downturns happening, and ones that can even affect America. Again, it's already affected. It can't, the war machine just can't go on as it has been for some time, because it just can't fucking afford it. You know, and you say, oh yeah, they just print money. No, you can't, they can't really print money. And one of the nice things about a lot of the legacy finance system, as much as I don't want them in Bitcoin, at the same time, they're going there because they know that this is coming. So I don't like it, but I do see it as a signal that, aha, you know, the system has failed. Actually, it failed a long time ago. But anyway, so going into the future, holding on to the, you know, the global currency, you know, it's the same arguments for why people held gold for so long and all these other things. Yeah, you know, just don't do it out of speculation, because, you know, within speculation, you have plenty of people who will make a great case to you that, no, all these things are still are already priced in. And those were conversations that didn't used to really happen in Bitcoin, but now they're happening. And I'm not saying you have to agree with them or pay attention to that. You know, could it still be $1 million Bitcoin in 20 years? You know, maybe. But for right now, at least for the next 100 years, you know, I don't see any of this stuff going away. And, you know, in 100 years, you can tell me that I'm wrong and I'll be here. You know, I'm 42 right now, 142. I mean, I could swing that easy. So, no, really. God damn it. yeah. Sorry. You can call me out on it. I mean, if you're still here. But anyway, as far as wallets, you know, where to store this stuff. So in my opinion, I still think the two best wallet, you always want two wallets, right? You want a hot wallet and a cold wallet. Okay. If you could only have one, I always recommend a hardware wallet. Okay. And my top choice every single time, and it's still true, especially with all, with the fiasco, you know, that has happened throughout 2023 with Ledger, the Ledger hardware wallet. My top pick is always Trezor. These guys just keep delivering. They did just have a new wallet come out this year, the Trezor Safe 3. Their Cadillac wallet is still the Trezor Model T. They still support the Model 1 years and years later. I mean, these guys just make the best shit in the world as far as hardware wallets go. You can even, if you did want to be, you know, a Bitcoin maxi, which I lean in that direction, you know, and I respect that direction. You know, I'd be looking at, like, with the Model T or even the Trezor Safe 3, you can set it for the firmware to Bitcoin only, which I think is a smart thing to do. But yeah, so any of their models really will do. I love their Model T. I've had one for many, many years. The thing does not fail me, no matter what it goes through. Of course, you know, I always store mine. I get like one of these, you know, kind of Pelican cases. Okay, good luck finding mine. But you know, get one of these waterproof, you know, cases that, and you can get smaller ones. Usually they're made for holding like ammo or something like that. And I just leave it in that, you know, pull it out every once in a while, not to make any kind of transaction. Wouldn't have anything really to transact anyway. But just to keep the firmware up to date on it, the software support across, you know, Mac OS, Linux and Windows, and even Android actually, is phenomenal with the Trezor. Or with any, with basically any model of Trezor. The Safe 3, I haven't used a Safe 3. I do love how open source it is. You know, there's a lot, I mean, that's true for most of their stuff. But yeah, that looked really slick, you know, and that's a little more cost-effective option, right? Like the Model T, I think, costs around $200. Maybe it's like 180 now. I think they did a price drop recently. And the Trezor Safe 3 is like $80. I think that's really worth looking at. It's got a nice little OLED, you know, monochromatic screen on it. Any of those will do you just fine. But that's really the only company I'd go with. They are the gold standard as far as hardware wallets go. And you know, there's so many features. Like, here's the thing too. So it's great that it's a hardware wallet, but then also the Trezor suite, you know, the software suite that you put onto your computer, say, has so many options where, you know, like, I mean, it has exchanges connected to it. It just has so many different things that you can do with it. It's really a one-stop shop. So it can be, honestly, it can be your hot wallet and your cold wallet. That's why I say, if you're only going to get one, that's the one. The software support's phenomenal. So, but then if you were just getting something put on your phone, I'd go with Edge Wallet. Edge Wallet, you know, Paul Pui and all those guys, gals and Z's, they've been doing Dynamite work for many, many years, and they still are, and they're still the best, as far as, you know, wallets that work on a smartphone. Actually also plays really nicely with iPhone. Jax Liberty, that shut down in 2023. So that's not necessarily an option now, even though that was a great wallet. Cool things happening with the Decentral people all the time. But that wasn't part of, you know, other things to work on. Right. So, you know, I would just go with Edge Wallet. That's my top recommendation. I mean, there's other good ones out, like there's Exodus and some others, but that's really the big one, in my opinion. And partly because they implement a lot of like new features, new protocols faster than just about anybody else. So I really dig Edge Wallet. Okay. So I think we got, I mean, that really ends the wallet conversation, you know, on that. If you did need a desktop wallet, like I said, there is Exodus, that's a great desktop wallet. But I wouldn't be looking too much, you know, beyond those. As far as kind of a quick look at the future. Okay. You know, to talk about the future of cryptocurrency is really to talk about the future of the economy of the world. I still firmly believe, and I've said this pretty much since episode 1 of Sovereign Tech. So go all the way back to 2012. I still firmly believe that the world, you know, even though there is going to be some economic hard times for sure. And there's an interesting argument. I mean, I've already made the argument that we're already in World War III. Like it's actually been going on for at least 2 or 3 years now. You just don't know it because it started off as a cyber war. Now it's getting physical. Part of that has to do with Israel, Hamas, and others. Okay. But we're already in World War III. And in some ways, even that ironic, or what would seem paradoxically, but ironically, you know, is kind of propping up and keeping a lot of economies from collapsing, say in, you know, Russia and other places. So, you know, things are not going to get better immediately. And I think for much of the world, it is doing this. It's not natural. It's really an artificial progression, but an artificial progression or evolution into the sprawl. Now, when I say the sprawl, I am referencing the classic William Gibson books, starting off with Neuromancer, you know, and Mona Lisa Overdrive and whatever. The sprawl is when basically the Earth more or less turns into Coruscant, right? Where like everything's a fucking city. Okay, we know already that the present trajectory is for most cities to turn into what would be called megalopolises, right? You know, you have the classic, which I brought up many years ago, of Bosniwash, which essentially means that everywhere from New York City to Boston to Washington, D.C., it's actually all one. Really, it's all one gigantic city. I mean, part of the problem is, what is a city? There's no clear definition on that. Okay, but we are heading towards the era of megalopolises, you know, maybe not so much like Judge Dredd, but, you know, in that direction. You could think of like Lagos, you know, where that and many of the other, you know, municipalities in the area, they really all kind of cover. It's become almost one city. There's other places where this is true. I think we're heading in that direction. And the thing is, you can only go, you can only build so high and you can only build so far out until things get even more confusing. And there is an argument to be made that what is going to naturally happen, evolve, quote unquote, naturally, even though, again, it's all artificial, what is going to, shall we say, artificially evolve out of that, or logically evolve out of it, perhaps, not to say that it's logical, but you get my point, would be the metaverse, would be digital real estate, right? And almost these digital fiefdoms that will occur because it will just be so confusing. There will be no real identity with any city anymore. Which right now, a lot of people do identify with their cities. They identify with Boston. I mean, I know I'm from New York City. It's a major part of your life, but that, you know, that sort of thing will fall away as to where, you know, kind of the metaverse will give people a more classical sense of identity, even though it's built on top of something like the metaverse. So I do think we're heading for the sprawl, for a while anyway. And look, this World War III could go on for 100 years. Okay. But we're heading for the sprawl. And, you know, so there's just going to be more and more city. And eventually it's just, again, people are going to want to feel like there is their own space or their own culture or their own subculture or whatever. And that's where the metaverse could come in. I could see that happen. The technology really still isn't there yet. Okay. But if it does happen, you know, it could allow for this expansion to go on for, you know, again, for 100 years or more. If it doesn't happen, this could all collapse a lot quicker, you know, because people are going to want to feel like that sense of identity and connection. So, you know, if you think that the technology is going to be there, then the metaverse is something, you know, that you might want to be prepared for, that it's going to happen. Okay. And before anybody says, oh, yeah, I'll save all this. No, it won't. No. You know, and then, I mean, then our projects like Ethereum or Solana and others, do they suddenly have validity once the metaverse becomes a reality? Yes, they do. Okay. Doesn't mean it's the way I want things to go. I'm just saying that this is how I predict things will end up going. We're not talking about price. We're talking about utility. We're talking about what does it do? How is it implemented? Forget about the price. Okay. Yeah, I know Solana had a rough year, but it's also up like 3,000%. or not three, it's an insane number that it's gone up in the past year. So like, you know, I'll rip on Solana all day too, but it's probably the only actual competitor, genuine competitor, to Ethereum out there. Doesn't mean it's a good idea. It just is what it is. Okay. So I want to wrap this up. We're at about the hour. So as things become the sprawl, and as there is more and more interconnectivity, okay, you know, this blockchain, you know, digital currency is not just, you know, something that you'd speculate on. It's a necessity. It has to exist for that. Okay. Now, without the sprawl, and in a world that has computers, it still has to exist, but it's going to become far more important in the future. And you're going to want to create, and this is why I don't think really altcoins are ever going to fall away, because a lot of people are like, oh yeah, in the future, everything's going to be Bitcoin. No, it's not. Okay. I mean, preferably if, you know, if we kept going on this trajectory and I was a conventional person, yes, I would want it to only be Bitcoin, but that's not what's going to happen. Why? Because you're going to, just like diamonds weren't the only valuable jewel, you know, in the ancient world, right? You have, you know, topaz and emerald and sapphire and blah, blah, blah. Okay. People are going to want other shiny things. They're going to want novelty and variety. And you can say, well, we can build that variety on top of Bitcoin. Yeah, you probably could. That doesn't mean it's a good idea. And I think it ultimately sullies Bitcoin's true value. But regardless, and that true value is security of the network. Regardless, okay, people are going to want that novelty. And so having a bunch of these, you know, altcoins and all these different types of digital assets, it's going to be a thing. Okay, the other thing that ends up coming from this is that it does become infrastructure, and you end up with what are called, tokenized RWAs. Okay, and what this means, RWA just means real world assets. Okay, so there is an anticipation that tokenizing, as in representing the land you own or something that you own or whatever, and this kind of gets into the NFT space, but not exactly. They've run away from that term, and now kind of the new term is tokenized RWAs. And again, that's different from NFTs, because NFTs, you really don't own anything. You know, at least with tokenized RWAs, you have the RWA. Regardless, this is a thing that, you know, has been anticipated really in blockchain for a very long time, but now it's starting to become an actual part of the conversation. And I think a big part of that comes from this, you know, having the RWA and the money basically on the same network. And, you know, but this only matters when you exist within megalopolises, when you exist within the sprawl. Outside of that, you can still do golden handshakes, you know, and everything else, because who cares? There's plenty for everybody. But when you end up in the, you know, in the direction that things are definitely do appear to be going, and I think that World War III is really leading a lot of things into, for the time being until it ends, you know, that's what the future looks like. It's not a pretty picture. It's not a good picture. Okay. It's actually kind of fucking bleak. It's actually very bleak. But I do think, and I'll put this out there, I do think that on the other side of all this comes a lot of realization. And I do think that there will always be the outliers, whether it's people living in the cracks or finding those, you know, spaces outside of the megalopolis, outside of the sprawl, if there are any. If not, they just make their own underground or whatever, you know, that they'll go to. And in those places, what do we know? We know from the Pentagon's own reporting that those kinds of spaces can only exist by having alternative infrastructure. And a major part of that alternative infrastructure within the sprawl, particularly if you're living in the cracks, is still going to be digital currencies. Like it just is. But if you're living outside of that, again, then, you know, you do what you like. And I think that there are a lot of, what I was going to get at is, there's clearly, to use this term, there's clearly a real spiritual awakening, an awakening of wanting genuine connection that is going on from the artificialness that we have to deal with, whether it's because of what Silicon Valley is schlepping on everybody, or if it's the bullshit that AI is flooding the internet with. I mean, the internet is, you know, like I subscribe to the dead internet theory anyway. You know, again, and the internet dying doesn't mean a world without computers, right? Like that's not the same thing. I grew up in the world without the internet but still had computers and fucking loved the things. I hate them now because they're connected to the internet. So non-internet connected computers, let's fucking go. Right? As we say in the crypto space. So anyway, we're in for some rough times. And so holding digital currencies, I think, is a smart move. They're not going anywhere. And it's still very much, in my opinion, it's still very much ground floor for all these things, regardless of what the value of Bitcoin is. It's still ground floor because most people don't understand what's coming in the future. And so they don't understand why they may need these things. I mean, look, you know, if you really want to hold value, you're going to make a garden in your fucking backyard and you're going to grow your own goddamn food. That's value. Bitcoin's bullshit and compared to a tomato. Bottom line. But if you're existing in the world as it is, then, you know, digital currencies are something, yes, that I think are worthwhile to holding and are going to be a part of your life, whether you like it or not. But, you know, if you want to step outside of all that, well, then none of this stuff really matters to you. Even though, unfortunately, most places on the planet where you live, you got to pay taxes somewhere. Otherwise, men with guns come and they take you off of the land and you can't hold them off forever. You try and hide. Maybe that's a viable strategy, but you can't hold them off forever. And so, you know, you got to have something that somehow pays them, whatever that happens to be. And if you can work some out kind of barter system, great. Okay. But again, for most of us, digital currencies are going to be the norm. So, you know, paying attention to them, being on top of the ones that have staying power, is there value in that? Absolutely. And that's part of the reason that I did this episode. You know, is it the future that I want? Honestly, no. but is it the future that's coming? Yes. And, you know, do I want to do my best to live outside of that future or live in the cracks of it? Yeah. Yeah, that's the plan. So, and maybe it's your plan too. But if not, yeah, you want to jump on these. Or, you know, you want to get educated on them at the very least and pay attention to when your threshold of entry point comes. Okay. So there you go. I'm not telling you go buy Bitcoin, go buy Litecoin, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying pay attention to your own thresholds and understand that these things are going to be a part of your life if you stay within society at large. Okay. That's it for this Sovereign Tech X. Kind of a rambling conversation, but there's so much that's gone on in crypto there's so much that's gone on in 2023, let alone since the last time I had a major conversation about it. You know, it needed to take a lot of twists and turns. It needed to be a journey. And I appreciate anyone who was listening and went on that journey with me. And if you find any value in it, of course, feel free to reach out to me. Plenty of ways to do so. And I will see all of you on the other side.